So moves approval of the minutes from the 16th meeting of the redistricting committee. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Members, there's a number of witnesses who have asked to testify on House File 2505. Just so members know, there was a miscommunication in the terms of start of session. Session actually will start approximately at 9:20, so we will go until 9:20. If our witnesses are not finished by that time, we will reconvene at 4 o'clock, just to make sure that everyone has adequate time to testify who was asked to. If there are any other witnesses in the audience who would like to testify, if you could please let the Greg Pappin, the redistricting analyst, know now. So we can put you on the list. That would be helpful as well, so we can make sure we have a lot of time. I think what we'll do is we'll have Representative Seifert present the bill, and for a presentation, we may take a few brief, depending on how long the presentation is, we may take a few quick questions from members, and then we will proceed quickly into the testimony. After that, it's my intent that we will lay over the bill. Today, and we will not have any votes. Any questions? Representative Gray.
Two. First of all, you said that we'll reconvene at 4 o'clock, so I'm assuming...
Representative Gray, we'll only reconvene if there are witnesses who have not had an opportunity to testify, who have asked to come forward.
I understand that, Mr. Chairman. So you're assuring us that session will be over by 4 o'clock, then.
Session is recessing at 4 o'clock from 4 to 6 today.
Oh, yes. I see. Mr. Chairman, as well, could you give us some indication of our future schedule? I see we're looking at the congressional plan today. It's my understanding there'll be no vote taken today. I'm wondering when you're planning on scheduling a vote on the congressional plan and when you might have it in mind to put the legislative plan on the agenda.
Yeah, Representative Gray, it's likely we'd have a committee meeting next Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday in terms of legislative and or congressional plan at that time.
Mr. Chairman, based upon that timetable, do you how much time then would be available? I assume that after that we have to bring it to the floor for a vote. And then there still has to be some time frame in which to have the conference committee with the Senate. Do you anticipate at this time that you would be able to complete this task before the end of the session?
That's our goal. Assuming we pass something off the floor, of course, as we've discussed, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I mean, there's still an opportunity there, or if the Senate concurs with whatever we pass.
Mr. Chairman, one final question. Have you had any informal communications with the Senate on their plan, you know, that might lead you to believe that you would be able to conference this rather quickly, or is this just a hope of yours that in the short time that we would have available, you would be able to resolve any differences between the House and the Senate plan?
Senator Pogemiller has said publicly that he's still optimistic there's room for compromise in coming up with the plan this session.
But you have not met with him informally?
Not in terms of their plan, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seifert moves that House File 2505 be recommended to pass. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the map that members have before them is a product of a lot of work by a lot of folks. Chiefly, I want to recognize my companion author in the Senate, Senator Kleiss, who has put a lot of work into this congressional district plan that is a fair plan that recognizes demographic shifts that have taken place in the last 10 years since the last census, cleans up lines, minimizes splits even more, has ideal populations of a zero deviation, and recognizes communities of interest. Senator Kleiss does have another meeting over in the Capitol building, and he would like to give some brief comments if the chairman and the members would indulge him, and in particular give some brief comments about the 7th and 8th district in particular, which is his neck of the woods.
Welcome, Senator Kleiss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity to be there. A lot of you folks would have voted for our unicameral legislation. Maybe I wouldn't have to be here testifying. And certainly this legislative redistricting would be a simpler process. But thank you, Representative Seifert. I will be brief. I do have to go to another committee, and I'll come back and certainly answer any questions. What we did in putting together this map, basically our task was to to recognize and look what's at what has occurred in the demographic shifts that have occurred over the last 10 years. And in recognizing that, what we did, and if you look at the population shifts, in the 11-county metropolitan area, in the entire 11-county metropolitan area, which now makes up 58% of the state's population, and if you look at excluding the 13% in the Minneapolis and St. Paul area, you've got 45% of the population in the suburbs. And as the state has grown at 12%, the most rapid growth has been in the suburbs. So in recognizing that demographic shift, what we did to come up with a plan is create three congressional seats in that suburban area, which again represents 45% of the population. We also have in greater Minnesota four congressional seats that predominantly are in greater Minnesota, and combining the areas of Minneapolis and St. Paul as a byproduct into a congressional district. Again, our map was to look at what has occurred over the last 10 years, recognizing that demographic shift and creating districts accordingly. We looked at as we put together the plan over the overall issue, again, was the demographic shifts. As we put together that plan, we looked at the criteria that all four caucuses have either passed or authored as amendments, and this plan meets all of the criteria of the four caucuses that have either been offered as amendments or have been passed actually the Senate or the House, and also recognizing the criteria of the Governor's Commission. I had an opportunity to testify in front of the Governor's Commission on the criteria or the principles that our caucus had, and again, this plan does represent that criteria. In the interest of time, we're going to be going over the plan. I just wanted to go over the first part, the 7th and 8th congressional district, and what we did in the 7th and 8th, and you all have maps, I believe, in front of you. What we did with the 7th and 8th is created districts that reflect, again, communities of interest and reflect basically, again, the population. What we did with the 7th congressional district is we have a district that's a central Minnesota district, a central Minnesota district that goes along a corridor, a I-94 corridor. You look at population centers from Moorhead to Fergus Falls, Alexandria, St. Cloud. Basically, we took an area in central Minnesota and created a congressional district across that area, certainly more of a community of interest. You've got a lot of dairy, corn farmers, the regional centers along the 94 corridor. Certainly, there's more in common in this plan with St. Cloud than the current plan. There's not as much in common with St. Cloud and Roseau, which is currently the congressional plan. So we recognize that type of congressional district. And the 8th district, we call the 8th district the northern part of the state, recognizing another corridor, the Highway 2 corridor. If you look at areas of Bemidji, Crookston, East Grand Forks, it goes along the top area, Highway 2. You take 35 and Highway 2, looking at that again, a physical or road corridor across there, and also represents a district that borders the Canadian border. Certainly there's a lot more in common with the district as it borders all of the district borders Canada. You've got the Iron Range and the Red River Valley, certainly an area of common interest. You also have in the 8th congressional district predominantly the areas, the Native American areas, as far as the reservations in that congressional district also. So you have two districts. Most people consider Minnesota up north, and up north means up north in the Canadian border, not the northern suburbs. So that's why we have a northern district that crosses, again, the top part of the state, and we have a congressional district in the 7th, which is central Minnesota district, and that's what we did in the 7th and the 8th district. So Mr. Chairman and members, again, we recognize the whole plan that we put together is recognizing, and you can't not do that, recognizing the demographic shifts that have occurred in this state, and that's what we did. And Representative Clapper will go over the next part, which would be the suburbs and then this first and second district.
Yep. Representative Seifert, that can continue.
Mr. Chairman, I can cover the rest of the presentation. I want to thank Senator Kleiss. Senator Kleiss unveiled this map, I think, about 3 weeks ago on my birthday, has submitted requests and followed up with phone calls and has been denied hearings apparently so far. So it's nice that, at least in the fairness that we have over here, that he at least can have a voice in having some fair testimony and so forth on this plan. And I know he has to check into a state government committee over in the Capitol, so I'll continue on unless if he can stay for questions on the 7th and 8th, it's up to him.
So Representative Kleiss, or I'm sorry, Senator Kleiss, are you going to return questions?
Mr. Chairman, I will return.
Okay, if we could, if it's all right, if you could return for questions, that'd be great, and we can allow you to continue with the presentation, Representative Seifert, so our witnesses have a chance to testify before we break for session.
All right, we'll see Senator Kleiss back, and then we can have some questions on, and I can handle questions on the 7th and 8th, but Senator Kleiss obviously had a lot more to do with getting that put together. Mr. Chairman, members, if you take a look at the map, I'm going to start in the 1st Congressional District down in the southeastern portion of the state and go numerically through the congressional districts. First of all, Mr. Chairman, from the people of Marshall, I want to thank you and the committee for coming out there. Rural Minnesota was very glad to have the redistricting committee come out for three field hearings, unlike the Senate, and have input from the people of Minnesota and how the congressional district should look. One thing that we did hear in the Marshall hearings and others was that we wanted to have four chiefly rural districts, and if you take a look at this map, it keeps within the premise that we're going to have four chiefly rural districts, and obviously if you're going to have some mixture of suburban involvement in order to keep within that zero population deviation. This map recognizes the demographic population changes of the last 10 years. The 1st Congressional District keeps roughly the same look that it had in the last redistricting plan. It keeps roughly the same border that it had in Dakota County. Lakeville was split in three pieces before. It is now split in two pieces. Le Sueur County, we make the border whole along the river where previously Le Sueur County was split between the 1st and 2nd Congressional Districts, and that is brought upon a common border with the river, which I think smoothens the line out quite nicely in Le Sueur County. And then in order to bring the population deviation to zero, the southern portion of Scott County, moving from the Dakota line where it stretches across to the river, is followed whole. Otherwise, the 1st District is largely the same that it was in the previous redistricting plan. The 2nd District, Mr. Chairman and members, is chiefly the same as it was before. There were two townships added in the Stevens County area, mainly to bring within that zero population deviation. There were no parts of Stevens County previously in the 2nd Congressional District. Stearns County was made whole within the new 7th District, and the city of Painesville and two townships were removed from the previous plan and put in with that 7 district, so Stearns is a whole county, minimizing a split there as well. Moving across, the city of Savage was added, and that is probably the main change that was made in the 2nd Congressional District, and there were some marginal changes made along the right Hennepin border between the 2nd and 3rd Congressional Districts to make lines more smooth. Generally, the 2nd Congressional District is chiefly the same as it was in the previous redistricting. The 3rd District, Mr. Chairman and members, is a western Hennepin County district for the most part. It brings it starts in the northwest portion of Hennepin County. It stretches along the right Carver line, bringing in cities in the west suburb that have a lot of commonalities and common interests. In order to bring in the zero population deviation that we have in our standards, the southwest portion of Minneapolis is brought into the 3rd Congressional District. Trying to follow the neighborhood lines to the best extent possible, following along roughly, for those who are familiar with the Minneapolis neighborhoods, the West Calhoun neighborhood, splitting along the East Harriet neighborhood and encompassing Shore Lake Calhoun, Lake Harriet, following through Page and Hale neighborhoods are split in order to get that zero population deviation. Lake Nokomis would be in the new 5th district and not in this 3rd district. So the line would follow along the south shore of Lake Nokomis and then follow over to through Winona and Morris Park neighborhoods, and that would be added to the third congressional district. The fourth congressional district is one of those districts that really recognizes the population growth and shifts that have taken place. It is very fast-growing suburbs, many young families with kids and daycare. That is a common interest that they have there. This area, of course, will have Congresswoman McCollum, who grew up in South St. Paul but lives in North St. Paul. Both that area encompassed in that district, all of Washington County, suburban Ramsey County, suburban Dakota County. There is a better split of Lakeville, which is solving some of the confusion problems that was happening in the Lakeville area. The river borders in Burnsville and the county borders along the Scott-Dakota lines are followed along quite nicely. Maplewood is split, but if people are familiar with the city of Maplewood, it is shaped rather oddly along the St. Paul border and then comes up along the north side. And so that was in some ways difficult to avoid in a lot of ways. Fourth Congressional District, of course, technically has two congresspeople living there, although moving on to the I'm going to do the 6th Congressional District next because it has some commonalities with the 4th, and that is the main split was between 4 and 6 because of the rapidly growing suburban area of the last 10 years. The 6th Congressional District, where I would believe Congressman Luther would probably move to, represents basically suburban Anoka and part of Ramsey counties. Congressman Luther represented a lot of this area in the state Senate in Anoka County back before the in the 1990s, before his election in 1994. Used to represent Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center. The new 6th district is much more compact than the previous one. It solves the problematic and odd shape of the current 6th district, which looks like a sideways horseshoe. We have a much more compact and neatly looking district in the 6th Congressional District. And there are a lot of commonalities in that Anoka County area and that northern Ramsey County area that really come forward. There are a lot of families that have things in common there, working families, probably more union households than the 4th. And bringing that district in, I think, really recognizes chiefly the demographic shifts that we have seen the last 10 years, along with the 4th district. The new 5th district is the city of St. Paul and most of Minneapolis. And following along with the ideas of keeping communities of interest together for a fair representation, as Senator Kleist pointed out earlier, we have the opportunity to recognize demographic shifts, and there are chiefly three areas in the state demographically and population centers, and then we have urban, suburban, and rural. We're trying to do the best we can with a zero population of recognizing that. This is a way to enhance, it's a new and exciting opportunity to enhance minority strength in Congress. And voting authority and voting power. It has a total minority population of 38.96% and a minority voting age population of about 31%. I would consider it a minority influence district. It is not packed, as some people might charge, but is rather has influenced or enhanced minority strength. There are different ways that you could work around the St. Paul, Minneapolis, Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center areas if you really wanted to get into the quote-unquote packing argument. What this does is we have influence, and we have a sufficiently large number of people to influence a candidate, and I think it's an exciting opportunity of enhancement. Minneapolis and St. Paul together deviates from the ideal congressional district size by 8.9%, which means the commonality areas along the south shores of the lake of South Minneapolis can be added to the 3rd Congressional District, to try to keep some commonality in that area and still keep within the deviations. There are common needs in the 5th Congressional District, including things like housing, transit, urban development, human services, immigration, different needs than some of the suburban districts like the 4th and the 6th District, where a congressman is going to end up having to have a conscience battle among themselves. Should I be fighting for urban development, or should I be fighting about green space? In the 4th Congressional District, for example, Mr. Chairman, we have more working mothers than any other congressional district in the United States. Those interests of the suburban folks in regard to transportation are a lot different than the folks who are in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Housing is another one of those concerns, where you have different concerns with the 4th and 6th districts and the 3rd district than you would have in this new 5th district. And then, of course, we have the commonality. If you look at the current map that we have with the splits, what do North Oaks and Frogtown and St. Paul really have in common? What do West Edina and North Minneapolis really have in common? Those are the commonalities of interest that we heard about in testimony earlier on. In the 7th Congressional District, Senator Clay spoke to that. Generally, common interests of tourism, lakes, the dairy farms following that 94 corridor from the Moorhead border over and then following along those rapid growing areas along St. Cloud. In the 8th District, of course, where we have common interests of natural resources, the outdoor recreation uses like snowmobiling, hunting, fishing, potato and wheat farmers, people who work the land, people who have a lot of things in common. People from Baudette probably have more in common with people from Grand Marais than people from Baudette have in common with people, suburbanites in Elk River. And the same thing of people, suburbanites in Chisago City, having more in common with people in St. Cloud than they do with folks who live up in Grand Marais, which would be the current setup. Senator Clay spoke to some of those changes. Mr. Chairman, I know we have a lot of testifiers here today, and I think I'm going to stop with that. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know that some of the folks who want to testify have to go, but I'm certainly happy to answer questions now or when the ethics hearing is going on later and we have to recess. So,
yeah,
and whatever the committee's indulgence
right, Representative is. Seifert, I think what we'll do is we will just take one or two very quick questions, and okay. We have a number of people who do wish to testify because of the time issue. As I said earlier, I mean, if we have to come back in at 4 o'clock to continue questions, we will do that. So, Representative Gray.
Mr. Chairman, I can wait with my question. Okay. I know there are people appreciate who are that. Waiting to test.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, would you characterize this plan as radically different from our current configuration of congressional districts?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that this plan recognizes the demographic changes of the last 10 years. I wouldn't characterize it as radical. I would characterize it as recognizing the demographic shifts and also recognizing the commonalities of interest of each congressional district that needs to have common interests united. And I pointed that out earlier with housing needs, transportation needs, development needs. Reaching the commonality of interests argument probably rising above what our current map has, because we have had a lot of changes the last 10 years, and I wouldn't characterize it as radical as I would common sense commonalities being united together.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Senator Seifert, I think most Minnesotans would probably use the word radically different. It is, however, a greatly different plan than the one that we currently have in force, is it not?
Mr. Chairman, it is a different plan, but I would also point out that the commonalities of interest are together, and I also think it reflects a lot of the testimony that we heard, both on the field hearings when we heard people say they'd like to have chiefly 4 rural districts, and here at the Capitol in the Twin Cities where people said they'd like to have communities of interest put together. And I think some of the testimony today probably will reflect some of those changes in the last 10 years of people who think that we do need to have some of these communities put together that have been split apart, and perhaps our old plan wasn't as fair as it could have been either. It is a change, Representative Mariani, and change is hard. I will admit that.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Chair, change is often necessary also. The reason I ask the question, however, is we're 11 days before the end of our session, and you've submitted a plan that is radically different than what we currently have in place, and that may be good or bad. That's for the debate, you know, for us to have that debate. However, we're going to have 11 whole days out of 5 months that we've been in session to have that debate, and it seems to me that's inadequate time for us to really put forward a good representation before the people of Minnesota on why we're going to radically differ these or change these congressional lines. But, Mr. Chair, I know you've got some witnesses here, and I know some people have traveled from a distance, and so I would certainly like to hear from them.
Yeah, appreciate that. And I'll just comment, I mean, 10 years ago, I think the plan passed with only 3 days before the end of session, so we're ahead of the timeline, certainly, in that comparison.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's also the only plan we have on the table that's been out there for three weeks for people to study, to criticize, to have hearings on. The Senate has had multiple hearing requests, either by telephone or by hearing request on paper, to no avail. So at least we're getting the process started. Maybe there is another plan that's been introduced. I haven't seen one yet.
Bob Cardinal is on first.
Just one quick question, Mr. Chair. Since we're
Representative Luther, real quickly,
real
please.
Since we're reviewing the congressional map right now, when do you expect to have the House district and Senate district map available?
As I said earlier, Representative Luther, it's likely we'll have a committee meeting on
Monday,
Tuesday, or Wednesday, probably in terms of
doing that.
Of course, there will be notice of maps.
Will you have a map then, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, as this map was available, I think that would be the same case. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mr. Cardinal, welcome to the committee.
Well,
please identify
you,
yourself.
I have my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative. Real quickly, Representative.
Well, Representative Siebert, this is primarily a Senate plan. At least all the publicity is surrounded it in the Senate plan. Do you have a House plan that you're going to drop on us at some future date?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, that's a good question. This is chiefly something that was come up by the Senate folks, Senator Kleiss, namely. I am not aware of another plan that's going to be introduced, but the chair might know the answer to that question if there'll be another one coming forward. And I don't know if the minority is going to have a plan, a minority report, or an amendment. Either. So maybe both those questions can be answered either now or at 4 o'clock.
Representative Anderson, Representative Pawlowski informed me there may be an amendment offered by the DFL side in terms of a plan, but I mean, this could certainly be the plan that is considered next week.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is there a House plan per se by the majority group?
Representative Anderson, there's not a committee bill out there at this point. I mean, this is the only bill, I believe, in the House that has been introduced to my knowledge, if that's correct. Terms of what's been referred to the committee.
Well, have you drawn a bill?
So, Representative Anderson,
Republicans drawn a bill?
Representative Anderson, no, there have been no bills introduced.
Well, I know that, but have you drawn a bill?
Well, as all caucuses are drawing maps, as you are, Representative Pawlowski informed me you have. I think all caucuses are doing that. Mr. Cardinal, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Bob Cardinal. I'm Mayor of Maplewood. You see Maplewood split on the map here. I scratched out my comments on the split. I think I can go along with this plan. We need to respect the process as you are doing and not shortchange all thinking. We need much more debate on the redistricting. The three players, the House, the Senate, and the Governor's Office, have a unique situation, unique in the country, and that should be recognized. We need to improve schools, roads, and create sound infrastructures, especially in St. Paul and Minneapolis. St. Paul and Minneapolis get federal money. None of the suburbs do get federal money. Only if you have over 50,000 population do you receive federal money. We shouldn't be concerned with local control for power. The federal government should be our great unifier for what is the common good. St. Paul and Minneapolis should be together in a congressional district to give minorities representation. Asians, blacks, Hispanics, Indians, and other minorities are due representation. You can display your understanding of civil rights through this process and what they're all about. This is an example of what the civil rights movement was all about. An opportunity like this should not be passed up. A congressperson represented Minneapolis and St. Paul won't get confused as to whom they represent. Maplewood has more in common with Oakdale, White Bear, Woodbury than St. Paul or Minneapolis for issues of housing and transportation. The 4th District is urban and not rural. The population shift is occurring in the suburbs, not in the core cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. Gerrymandering should not occur in this process because of the three different actors, the House, the Senate, and the governor. What an opportunity. The 4th District is not insignificant. The 4th District can be so much more than a weak congressional seat. If you hear anything I say today, it is that you should not in any way minimize the importance of Congress and representation. An effective congressperson can really turn the economic situation around in their district. If this congressperson is in the majority, they can do so much more. This should not be a matter of whose side of the aisle you're on, but what is right for the people. Please listen to all opinions and avoid partisan decay. Let's all work together in a fair process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cardinal. Representative Mariani had a question of you, I believe, Mr. Cardinal, if you could just wait a second.
Good morning.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you. Mayor Cardinal, and welcome.
Thank you.
It's always good to have local elected officials here.
Thank you.
I listened to your testimony carefully, and I'm trying to kind of quickly get comprehend this plan. I represent St. Paul, or a part of St. Paul. I understand that your school district partners pretty heavily with our school district. I believe we're currently involved in the Tri-Metro.
One school. One school that there are several communities represented in. Yes.
Okay.
And which is located in Maplewood.
Right. And Mayor, your...
that school has a couple hundred students.
Mr. Mayor, your school district also is part of the East Metro Integration District. Is that correct?
Mr. Cardinal?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The school district is in Roseville, very small part, which this map reflects a beneficial situation for our Maplewood because of that area being represented by Roseville. The other part of the district is the other district in Maplewood is North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale.
And Mr. Mayor, I believe there's 10 or 11 school districts that participate in the East Metro Integration District. My school district is one of them, Mr. Chair, and I know that I believe White Bear might be the furthest out that participates in that. As the fourth as the new fourth is configured here, the southern reaches of that district go down to Hastings and beyond, and the western southern part it goes out into Farmington and Lakeville City. Mr. Mayor, it's your testimony that Maplewood has more in common.
Absolutely.
With Lakeville and Farmington than
Absolutely.
It does with St. Paul?
Absolutely.
Mr. Cardinal.
If you would visit Maplewood, which is the home of 3M, you would find that there's quite a difference between what Maplewood is and St. Paul is, the dividing line. In fact, it should be noted, housing costs in Maplewood are $25,000 higher than St. Paul.
Mr. Chair and
Representative Marianne.
Mr. Mayor, and I will certainly defer to your knowledge of the local issues. I can tell you that I, in fact, go into Maplewood quite a bit, and quite frankly, when you travel from St. Paul to Maplewood, it's often pretty hard to figure out whether you're still in St. Paul or Maplewood. And we have a large expanding Hmong community on that part of St. Paul, and I know that your city's been blessed with their presence as they continue to move eastward. But thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Next testifiers are Rick Aguilar and Ricardo Vallejos. I'd like to welcome you back to the committee.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the tape and present your testimony.
My name is Rick Aguilar, and
Mr. Chair and Committee, it's a pleasure to be here this morning.
My name is Ricardo Vallejos.
Why don't I start out, Mr. Chair and Committee members. Once again, my background, just a little bit, is I've been born and raised in St. Paul, Minnesota. My parents migrated here from Mexico in 1930. And I say that because I think in the 30s, 40s, and perhaps in the 50s, that was the first really migration or the increase in the Hispanic population here in Minnesota. And I think that's very significant because of the fact that what we are seeing now is very historical. We're seeing this huge population growth of the Hispanic community since 1990, a growth that went from 53,000 to 143,000 Hispanic population growth. So I just wanted to note that because as the community grows, and I do say community because I think this is the fact that how Hispanics see each other. Of course, for many of you that have been around the Capitol for many, many years, we know that the heart of the Hispanic community was the west side of St. Paul, and for many, many years, and that was that has expanded now. The community has expanded into Minneapolis. There's a tremendous growth there, and we see a growth of not only in the churches but in the commerce, where the Hispanics have come and have added a richness to Minnesota. So I think that one of the things that we have recognized, and I think that we have talked about before when we were able to testify, is the fact that much will be looked at and demanded from this community as it grows. We're expecting a 20% population growth every year with this community. We are just at the tip of the iceberg and seeing and becoming more like other metropolitan communities and metropolitan cities around the country. And we have to look at this and be very serious about what this means to Minnesota. A lot of communities that at one time were not affected by this growth are seeing it. This is no longer a population or a community you can pinpoint one area. This is one that is expanding. And I think it is up to you to make sure that as this community expands and the expectations expand, that we have to be very serious and take very careful look at what is going to be happening with the Hispanic community. What will be expected of this community? Two things. One thing is to respect the education and what Minnesota has always stood for is a good education. We have to be there. Our community has to overcome some obstacles, and one of them is the language. And I think that's happening. But two, we have to be involved, and the Hispanic community has to be involved politically. That will be demanded of us. It will be expected of us. And that's why we're here this morning, to say that we have an opportunity by making St. Paul and Minneapolis one congressional district. We have an opportunity to allow the Hispanic community to be represented here in Minnesota. We have this opportunity, and I think that this is an opportunity we should take. In a lot of ways, it's a dramatic move, but this is a community that has come here for many, many reasons. Many have migrated from Mexico, from Latin America. They want to be a part of the political process. They want to be represented. So I think that we have to take this very seriously, and when we look at what's going to be happening in the Hispanic community, we have to realize that they are already playing an important role. You can ask any employer that has had the opportunity to employ Hispanics. These are hardworking people. These are people with pride. But if we do not take this opportunity to allow them to be a part of political process, to allow them as one community to feel representatives, to feel candidates, and to have this part of the American dream, I think it'll be a mistake. Because by the time we come back together after the next census, we're going to see hundreds and thousands of more Hispanics here. And if they do not feel they're part of the political process within these 10 years, we could lose a great opportunity to make this community Hispanic community feel that they are part of what Minnesota is all about. So with that, if there's any questions, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, gladly take them.
Questions of Mr. Aguilar. Representative Mariani.
No, Mr. Chair and Mr. Aguilar, are you here speaking in favor or against this plan?
Mr. Aguilar.
Well, I'm in favor of a, making St. Paul and Minneapolis one congressional district.
Well, Mr. Chair Mariani. And Representative Aguilar, we did some quick numbers crunching of this plan versus the current 4th and 5th congressional districts, and it might be surprising for you to know that in the 5th congressional district, Hispanics comprise 6% of that population. Under this plan, it'll go up to a whopping 7%. In the 4th district, people of Hispanic people represent 8% of the 4th congressional district. Under this plan, they actually drop to 7%. So I guess my question to you, and maybe you weren't aware of these figures, but my question to you is, how does the Hispanic representation of 8% drop in the 4th district, dropping down to 7% in this new district, constitute, in your mind, progress for Hispanic representation?
Well,
Mr. Aguilar?
Mr. Chair, Congressman, Representative Mariani, I'm sure that one of the things that I've heard you argue about is the accuracy of these numbers. And that's what I always go back to. We could talk about your plans and what these plans mean, but what is the accuracy of these numbers? And what do they really mean? And I think when we look at that, is that I'm in favor, and not knowing the numbers, and I would say to this body here that I am not aware and have not studied these plans, and I think that one of the things that were just mentioned here is the fact you have 11 days to look at all the plans in it. But I'm sure that I'm here to just say that I think that this is an opportunity, and you're going to be citing about the plans. It's an opportunity to combine the Hispanic community as one body and to give them an opportunity. I'm sure that if we look at the population increases, these plans could change dramatically by next year. The very numbers you are talking about, Representative Mariani, could change dramatically in 1 year. We do not know the shifts of this community. They shift rapidly. The growth is rapid. This plan changes dramatically. So I'm here to tell you that you might look at this plan, but you are not, and you could not tell this body that will not change within 6 months, within a year. And I think that this is what I'm in favor of. And is there another question?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Aguilar, I appreciate that you don't know the numbers here. That certainly is our job and the job of our policy wonks who have to crunch these census figures. The numbers, the percentages I gave you are the percentages that are not estimated percentages, but are in fact numbers. But I think it's really, or accurate numbers, but I think it's really important that when we look at these plans that we in fact do know what they mean in terms of percentage impacts and what the numbers are. And you made another point, which I agree with, Mr. Aguilar, and that is the potential for rapid growth in the Hispanic community. I think it's, you and I both agree, it's huge. And most likely will continue to be huge, certainly over the course of our lifetimes. One of the things that concerns me about this plan, as I look at it, is that if you look at even 50%, if you assume even 50% of our growth, which is a very conservative, I mean, I think you and I would probably agree that our communities are going to grow pretty close to the growth rates that they're going on right now. But if you look at 50% of our current growth rate, by the time we're doing redistricting again 10 years from now, if we keep the 4th and the 5th district separate, minority communities of both the 4th and the 5th district will in fact constitute minority opportunity districts. And what I'm saying by that is that 10 years from now, it's my argument based on using our current growth indicators, and based on our current population, that minorities are going to be in a position to influence two congressional districts. If we adopt the plan before us, 10 years from now, minorities are going to be in a position to influence one congressional district. So I guess in effect, I'm agreeing with your sort of basic premise, which is, as I understand it, that minorities should be in a position to be able to influence to the greatest extent possible the outcome of our elected officials. I guess I would urge you to relook at this plan and reconsider your support for it, because I think your position is better supported by arguing that we should continue to have two congressional districts, because 10 years from now, people of color will be in a stronger position to elect two congressional representatives as opposed to being packed into one urban district and only be able to influence one congressional representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariano, I think that that those are things to consider, but we also have to take into account the time it will take to have this community involved in the process. I look at it as having one community, and this current plan having one community. It's going to take time to get this community involved in the political process. Many of these people that have arrived, the Hispanic community that has arrived, have not been involved in the process. So I look at this plan that's presented today as seeing a great opportunity as one body, as one group that can learn from each other, that can field a one candidate, and so. I appreciate the remarks by Representative Mariani, but I'm still in favor of the plan we have before us.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, it's my contention before this committee that regardless of the arguments that are made about minority representation, that what this plan really does is create a non-competitive disadvantage to the Republican Party in Minnesota. And we'll get into more, I guess, discussions about that later. But I guess I'm wondering if you could tell us, Mr. Aguilar, you and I have been around the block several times together, and we've done some things together, and we fought, and
I believe I campaigned against it a couple times.
Yeah, we're almost always on the opposite sides of my elections.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
In fact, you usually have my opponents' names up in your shop window up on Smith Avenue, and most of my opponents are not Hispanic opponents, they're mostly Anglo opponents. I'm wondering, just for the record, if you can tell this committee whether in fact you are active in the Republican Party in St. Paul.
Mr. Aguilar?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, yes, I have campaigned against you many times, and then we haven't fielded a Hispanic candidate against you. We will be doing that, I think, with this current plan. And that's our goal. That's what I'm here for, is to get more Hispanics involved as a community. And I think that maybe you might sense that as something that could endanger your seat, but I think that I have been not a card-carrying member of the Republican Party. I've campaigned for Mayor Coleman as a Democrat. I've campaigned for other Democrat candidates. And currently, I am campaigning for a Republican, Mayor Coleman, when you turn Republican, and I have been involved in the co-founder of the Hispanic Republican Assembly. And not going into details why we have formed this Hispanic Republican Party, because I believe there's many core values of the Republican Party that have made this party the party of the Hispanic community. And so we have a very formidable group that is very involved, and we're going to be growing that group. So I think I've answered that.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Aguilar.
Thank you.
Mr. Vallejos, if you'd like to proceed with your testimony and be
yes.
as brief as possible.
Yes, my name is Ricardo Vallejos.
I have been living in Minnesota since 1981, pretty much all my adult life, and have been involved, and I'm involved in the Hispanic community in various ways. I've been on boards of directors of several nonprofits. I'm currently on the board of advisors for La Prensa de Minnesota, one of the newspapers in town, and also a board member of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. I'm currently also involved with religious and social service nonprofit agencies, helping them in various capacities. And I am in favor of this plan. I wanted to address some of the issues that we talked about here. I think Representative Mariani was combining some Hispanic numbers and some minority communities of color numbers, and I don't think the communities of color are one group. But for the Hispanic community, I want to just make briefly the case. I want to touch six areas and speak about 30 seconds on each one on why the Latino community, the Hispanic community in Minnesota and in Minneapolis, St. Paul particularly, is one community. We define community in terms of culture much more than in terms of geography. And the first thing I want to speak about is media. There are many, a handful of newspapers in this town, as well as a few radio stations. I want to briefly mention a couple of the newspapers. One of them is La Voz Latina, which began as La Voz de St. Paul. I helped start the newspaper. The first year I did most of the work for that newspaper for the publisher Tim Spitzak. He runs a few newspapers, including one of them, which is called the St. Paul Voice. He wanted to name, and he named the newspaper La Voz de St. Paul, which is a literal translation of the St. Paul Voice. I disagreed with that name. We had that name for a few months, and eventually it became clear that there was a fallacy here of defining community, a community newspaper, geographically, and it was wrong. We renamed it La Voz Latina because it's a newspaper that a media outlet that reaches the complete Hispanic community, Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's rather a seamless community. La Prensa de Minnesota was housed in the Midway area for a while. Then they moved their offices to South Minneapolis, Lake Street. Now they have their office in the west side of St. Paul. People don't see them as switching sides or anything. It's just one community. You move here, you go there. It's really one Hispanic community. Radio Rey is a Hispanic radio station, and they were housed for a long time. They are actually the granddaddy of all of Hispanic radio in Minnesota. Lupe Gonzalez is the grandfather of Hispanic radio in Minnesota. They were housed for a long time on the west side of St. Paul. Now they're housed in Minneapolis and in South Minneapolis. And nobody sees them as switching sides or going somewhere else. They are still very much part of the Latino community. Moving on to another topic of food and art and entertainment, we Latinos in the Minneapolis and Paul area move back and forth seamlessly to different Latino and Hispanic restaurants. I have a few groups, a group that meets for breakfast once a month, Latino business people, and another group that meets for lunch, and we go to Boca Chica and other groups that people get together. You go to Boca Chica on the west side of St. Paul, and then you decide to go out to Victor's 1959 Cafe on southwest Minneapolis. Then you go to Me Gusta on southeast Minneapolis. All the restaurants on the west side of St. Paul, such as El Burrito and El Amanecer, we really flow back and forth as one community. We don't think Minneapolis and St. Paul for the most part, very seldom. Same with dances, and the same thing with cultural events and concerts, plays. You know, things happen in a church in South Minneapolis, and then some event is happening in Guadalupe, so we go there. Something at the History Center, downtown St. Paul, and then something at the location in Minneapolis. By the way, there are several communities that are developing geographically, but that's almost irrelevant. People just move around. We have a southwest Minneapolis, southeast Minneapolis, north Minneapolis. In St. Paul, we have Midway, the west side, and the east side of St. Paul. I also know many Latinos who live in the Highland Park area. I mean, we're all over the place, all over Minneapolis and St. Paul. For business, besides these business groups I have, Aguilar Productions holds events, and they're either in West Saddle St. Paul, in South Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis. It's really almost irrelevant where the location is, as long as it's a Hispanic location. And the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is housed in Minneapolis now. We could have been housed in St. Paul too, and if somebody offers us free office space in St. Paul, we may consider St. Paul. It's really, we act, flow freely between the two cities. We just had some workshops at Hamline University. They offered us the space. We went there, did some workshops on advertising and marketing, and that was at Hamline in St. Paul, Midway. We have done things in the west side of St. Paul, South Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis. So it's really, again, free flow. Religion, there are many churches. People go to Guadalupe. People go to events in Minneapolis side of the area. And, again, people living anywhere. People living in Midway go here and go there. There is an association of Hispanic evangelical pastors in Minnesota. And, again, they represent churches all over Minneapolis and St. Paul. They meet once a month on Saturday mornings. They may meet at a church in East St. Paul. I've gone to those meetings. I've gone to meetings where they met in South Minneapolis. Then they meet somewhere in Midway. I mean, they just flow freely. It's one community, one group. And finally, social institutions, CLU, Centro Legal, Oportunidad, Casa de Esperanza. So many of these groups have moved offices. Some of them have one or two or three offices, depending on where, when they need to be in the actual neighborhoods. But we all recognize it is one location. When Casa de Esperanza hosts an annual fundraiser, they will choose a location that is suitable, that is nice, that is free or almost free, obviously as a nonprofit, and given to them. And it's really irrelevant, again, the location, as long as we are talking about the core community of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And again, six main neighborhoods, if you would, or areas, you know, southwest Minneapolis, southeast Minneapolis, north Minneapolis, west side of St. Paul, Midway, and east St. Paul. I want to bring to your attention this article that I just saw. It's from La Prensa, Hispanics in Minneapolis and St. Paul United by Language, Culture, and Commerce. It is one community. The growth of these communities, I think we all agree there is an undercount. Representative Mariani was talking about some numbers and some current numbers. We know there's an undercount. It's also an undercount in projections, but the communities of in Minneapolis and some of the St. Paul non-traditional communities, which means away from the west side of St. Paul, are growing exponentially, very, very much, a lot faster than other communities, Latino neighborhoods. So we don't know what's going to happen in 1, 2 years, even 5 years. I think it's going to be an incredible growth, and I would bet that there's a real a great percentage of Latinos when we combine the two cities. Thank you,
Mr. Vallejos. Representative Mariani, a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Vallejos. Before I start, I have to say I saw you down at Cinco de Mayo, and you were looking bien chévere. You had on that hat and a serape.
Thank you. You
were a lot warmer than I was. So
thank you.
That was a wonderful event. I want to ask you a question, but I also want to just make a brief comment about this issue of people crossing the river to go to restaurants. I would submit to you that white people cross the river to go to restaurants,
yes,
too.
Yes.
One of the things that was really interesting to me when I first came to the state 25 years ago, was that this phenomenon of Twin Cities residents every weekend driving up 169 to go up to Mille Lacs and go up to their cabins and to the resorts up north. And one of the interesting things that has happened, I think, with the kind of the demographic shifting here is that a lot of those folks now own property up there. Back then, they owned property up there. So, you know, it's not a unique thing that Minnesotans travel great distances to pursue culinary tastes or to pursue their recreational tastes. I'm not sure, having recognized that alone becomes a good reason for how we draw political maps. But anyway, it's just a comment for you and for the committee, because we spend an extraordinary amount of time exploring the peculiar culinary interests of communities of color, and And yet we never got around to asking, when we had Anglos and whites in front of us, what their culinary interests were and how far they were willing to travel. Let me ask you kind of the same question I asked Mr. Aguilar, and that is, and let me just ask it in a much more simpler way. Mr. Vallejos, if this community has an opportunity to be influential in the choice of two congressional representatives, in your mind, would that not be better than being limited to being influential in one congressional race? Would Hispanics prefer to have two individuals that they can influence into office as opposed to one?
Mr. Vallejos.
Yes, before answering the question, I'd like to address your comment. The reason here of crossing the river and going to restaurants is not directly a comparison with the overall community, because we're talking about an identity issue and a cultural issue. When we say, oh, let's go to this restaurant, let's go to a restaurant, we're talking about let's go to one of our Latin restaurants, let's check out our Latin food and support our community, small business people. Much like somebody would say, oh, I live in Frogtown and I'm supporting my community and I eat around this and all my restaurants in my area because I support my community. Somebody like in any other geographical area, I live in Guayzara and I really like this town and what's become and so on. And in that same way in which a regular resident of Minnesota would say something like that, we'd say we support our community. And this is a community identity situation as opposed to let's check out some new dish or some new restaurant. That is the key difference.
Well, Mr. Chair, could I just make one comment, too? I hate to interrupt this, but
Mr. Aguirre, briefly.
If Representative Mariani thinks that people from Minneapolis come over to St. Paul restaurants he hasn't been around, they never get over here. It's very rare.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair?
Representative Mariani.
I'm wondering if Mr. Vallejos would care to answer my question on this.
I was in the process of doing that. I just wanted to make a quick brief point.
Thank you.
But that is it. I would say that as a hypothetical question, yes, it would be nice to have two over the one. I think it's better.
So two congressional, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vallejos, two congressional representatives is better than one in your mind?
It's a very simple question. I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate that. I believe next on we should go to Pat Norby, I think, who has a commitment. So get Pat Norby come forward from the New Hope City Council.
Good morning.
Mr. Norby, welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you. My name is Pat Levine Norby. I'm an elected official of the city of New Hope. And I might say just quickly, because the older I get, the the more precious time becomes. So as a senior citizen, let me talk rapidly and say to you and give you a little a background of why I am here representing myself and as a community stakeholder. The good news is that New Hope is split in this plan. And I say it is good news because I guess then we would at least be with suburban districts. A suburban district. Right now, at present, we are with Minneapolis, and I will talk about that in the future. I'm not particularly enamored with the split of New Hope, but it's not new to us in the way we work with our people. And I might say that we're just so excited in our community. We have one of the finest Latino grocery stores and soul food grocery stores right in our city center. So I will provide for the committee, Mr. Chair, the breakdown of our Hispanic and our human rights groupings that the North Metro committees, mayor's committees have worked on, because we do work so much together in our diversity situations. I say to you professionally, I've been a nurse. I just began my 40th year, and I'll be finishing it soon, hopefully, helpfully. My dedication to the political system and the community has been twofold. I served two terms and chose to leave 281, which was the Robbinsdale School District, which includes seven cities. And then I'm coming on the end of my second term as City of New Hope and will be retiring in a year. I grew up in the city of Minneapolis, the Lake Nokomis area, and until last fall, my parents lived in the Lake Nokomis area and died happily as homeowners in the South Minneapolis area. So I am very familiar with Minneapolis and all the communities you've mentioned. We have more in common in the suburban areas than we do with the city of Minneapolis. The suburbs, whether we're first, second, or third rings, we deserve to be united together. The time has come. We need a congressional district that represents us instead of being lumped together with a larger metropolitan city. We have much more in common with our neighbors of Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Osseo, Anoka, Columbia Heights, Mendota Heights, whatever, which are 10 to 15 times larger than we are, which City of Minneapolis, I think, is almost 400,000 now. So suburban communities are already working together on many joint ventures, including fire departments, as we are in Crystal, New Hope, transportation issues, traffic control, human rights commissions, as I've mentioned. We have transportation issues that are pretty much the same, and we work together closely through our suburban groups, Golden Valley and so forth, all included. We have the main drags of 36th Avenue, County Road 42. And I must say we work closer with the County of Hennepin. And the funding, as you know, seems to go to the larger urban areas than, need I tell you, the suburban or the rural areas. Our suburban city councils and our forms of government are more alike. We have 5 to 7 member city councils, unlike the city of Minneapolis that has 13, and politically are dominated by one party. We are diverse on our city councils. I think you will find that in a breakdown of data. We share concerns and meet regularly over watershed district problems. We try to find a way to work with our school district, 281, as cities, and we meet monthly. Our neighborhoods mirror one another in terms of our age, elderly like me, and younger housing areas. We're working so hard on redevelopment, and we do it block by block. We can't, when we're doing redevelopment in our communities, in the suburban areas, we're not talking about 30-story high-rises. We're talking about block by block, house by house, that we're rehabbing and getting affordable housing. And we're so proud of that in our northwest suburban communities of that project. Most of our people tend to stay within our communities of suburbia, and special events occur downtown, of course, but we can latch onto the transportation and get there. The bottom line is New Hope and has much more in common with our suburban neighbors. And we continue to work very closely with them. That's to say, we don't work with the city of Minneapolis, but our people in our communities, I believe, in my opinion, expect us to act and get something done. And we have to work together for that and face all diversity, all problems together, and that's what we're doing. So please provide us with the opportunity to join with our other neighbors around us and our like-minded suburbs and form a congressional district that would give diversity a chance in the community. And so I am speaking in favor of this concept, even though New Hope is split. And I don't see the mayor here, because he probably wouldn't like that. But thank you for allowing me, and I'll just
thank you, Ms. Norby.
Stop and
Representative Mariani, I had a question for you.
Thank you, real quick, and welcome to the committee. It's good to have you here. You said something that caught my ear about, I think you said Hispanic population. Do you, I'm curious, I know very little about New Hope. What is the nature of your communities of color in New Hope? Is that a growing presence, a large presence?
Oh,
is
it? Wow.
Ms. Norby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to, we're a little more casual at City Council. yes, oh, we're growing rapidly. We have a large black community, okay. Hmong community, and New Hope and the Lutheran churches in that area was one of the first to immigrate with the Vietnamese family, so we have large people who represent on various commissions. And this goes for Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, too, and I don't know if they're here to speak to that. And yes, we do have a large Latino community, okay, growing, and are involved very actively in our Hennepin County Human Rights Commissions that represent our areas. So we're really excited about it, and you can stand on our corners and you can see real diversity in action. It's wonderful.
I'll come visit. Thank you.
With Swedes and Norwegians, of course.
All the better.
Thank you, Ms. Norby. Thank you. Next is Mr. Meisinger. Dave Meisinger, come forward, please. See you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Meisinger. If you could identify yourself for the tape, please proceed.
My name is Dave Meisinger. I am the current mayor of the city of West St. Paul. And thank you for having me this morning. I just want to briefly, I know we're pressed for time, I'm not going to talk about the different ethnicity of West St. Paul versus the St. Paul. I think that's been discussed here very well this morning. I want to talk about the physical differences of West St. Paul versus St. Paul. So we are considered a first-ring suburb, but I do consider ourselves just a suburb. I don't bring the first ring into it. The city of West St. Paul has spent the last 2 years hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars for redevelopment plans for housing and commercial. We are trying to actively separate ourselves from St. Paul. St. Paul's done a great job with the redevelopment that they're undertaking, but most of that development has been downtown, and the outskirts of St. Paul really haven't seen the benefits of that yet. So our city does border St. Paul, and we're actively addressing a situation to separate ourselves physically with the redevelopment of commercial and housing properties. West St. Paul is a part of Dakota County, not Ramsey County. We are actively involved in Northern Dakota County Chamber of Commerce. We share police and fire dispatching and mutual aid with other Dakota County cities, South St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and Grove Heights. We also have a county trail system, that's the Dakota County Trail System, that is not connected into Ramsey County, and it connects all the cities of Northern Dakota County. So with that aspect, like I say, with the current plan, the proposed plan, I support, you know, separating, keeping the separation of West St. Paul and St. Paul, keeping us in the 4th District, because like I said, we are not part of St. Paul. I say that the residents of our city don't want to become part of St. Paul, and that's why we're actively pursuing the redevelopment. So briefly, that's where I stand on that situation and the residents of West St. Paul. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Take any questions if anybody has any. And
thank you, Mr. Meisinger. Representative Mariani.
Not a question, just a very quick hello. I'm your neighbor just immediately to your north, and who knows, I might be your representative by the time this is all said and done.
Who knows?
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is Marlene Sruek here? Is it Sruek?
No, it's Zurich.
Zurich, I apologize.
Don't pronounce Zurich. It, yes, yeah. It'll be fine.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
I am Marlene Zurich. I am an elected official in the city of Columbia Heights.
Please proceed.
Thank you. We feel that we deserve to be united together in a congressional district instead of being lumped with Minneapolis. We have much more in common with the cities that are north, east, and west of us than we do with Minneapolis, and it's almost 400,000 population. That's more than 20 times larger than our little city of Columbia Heights. Suburban communities already work together on many issues. Fridley and Columbia Heights share school district number 13. We have been mutually affected by the international headquarters of Medtronic, and we have collaborated on a study that looked at the impact and the benefits to our two cities. We meet quarterly with Fridley and the District 13 and Anoka County to discuss our mutual problems and our concerns. We share transportation issues with the suburbs north of us. Two major roadways run through Columbia Heights and our neighboring cities. We share a mutual interest in the commuter rail system. As a matter of fact, several of us serve on that committee and have worked really hard to see that become a reality. We also meet on a regular basis with other cities in Anoka County to discuss mutual problems as well as the effect of pending legislation will have on our cities. It is very important that we have this opportunity to meet with each other as well as to pick each other's brains. Our forms of government are very similar. We have a city manager and 5 members of the city council, unlike Minneapolis, which has 13 members. And as my friend from New Hope said, we are much more diverse in our political leanings, and we are not run by one political party. As a matter of fact, we are nonpartisan in a city council election. We also have much in common as far as the age of our housing, the value of our housing, and our tax levels. We share the same commercial and industrial development ideas. Our concerns are on a much smaller scale than Minneapolis. The dollars that we have to invest would never reach the scale as Minneapolis investments and their redevelopment. I just want to say that we have much more in common with the cities like Fridley and New Brighton, St. Anthony, Spring Lake Park, Moundsview, Robbinsdale, Crystal, and New Hope than we would ever have with Minneapolis. And I would ask that you would provide us an opportunity to join with our neighbors so that we can work together and have the same congressional representation. And I know personally that the people in our district, in the city of Columbia Heights, this is really an odd phenomenon, but we consider ourselves a small town surrounded by other cities. And that feeling has been in Columbia Heights for as long as we have existed as a city. And we do not feel that we are a part of Minneapolis, and we would rather stay with the suburbs and the cities that are north of us. And I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sirk. Representative Tingelstad had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sirk, thank you for coming today. Mm-hmm. And we are both from Anoka County, yes. So I know you covered a lot of things of what we have in common. Sure. A couple of the additional things that I thought of while you were going through that list was the North Metro Mayors Association, mm-hmm. and then also the Metro North Chamber of Commerce. So Anoka County has a strong area there as far as communities of interest and other issues that we're dealing with. So I appreciate you coming down today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wondering, are you speaking on behalf of the entire council, or are you just speaking on your own behalf?
I'm a member of the city council, and I was asked to come and speak as a city council member.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
I'm wondering, have you been empowered, though, by the council to speak on behalf of the city? Is there a resolution? I guess I'm
No, we have no resolution.
Ms. Zurich.
I'm sorry. Representative Gary? Is
Gray.
That your name? Sorry. Gray? I'm sorry. No, we don't have a resolution at this time. I've lived in Columbia Heights for almost 40 years and have been a part of the political process in Columbia Heights for probably 15 of those years. One way or another, and I understand how the people in our community feel, and as that, and for my longevity, I was asked to speak as to how we feel about where we sit. I know we sit at the very southern portion of Anoka County, but I feel the only thing we really share in common with Minneapolis is 37th Avenue.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
I think I'm just trying to get a definitive answer here. If I understand you, you're speaking on your own behalf based upon your own experiences.
This is correct.
And would you suggest that this is unanimous among your colleagues on the council, then, your opinion?
Oh, yeah, we've talked about it many times. We've talked about it many times.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, do you have a political party preference?
I do.
Ms. Zurich.
I do.
And would you state that?
I'm a Republican.
Yes, sir. Okay. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Sirk, and as with the other local officials, I want to welcome you here today.
Thank you.
Your Columbia Heights is currently not part of Minneapolis in the current congressional district. Is that correct?
Ms. Sirk.
That is correct.
Okay. And so your testimony is basically you would like not to be joined with Minneapolis in the current congressional district.
Missouri?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sirk. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
I've been informed by the speaker that they are holding session until 9:30, just so you know, to give us time for our, just for us. For
they don't do that for the tax committee.
Mr. Frank Taylor.
What are you doing here, Ron?
Mr. Taylor, welcome to the committee. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Frank Taylor. I live in Minneapolis. I run for Congress 5th District twice, PhD candidate at the University of Minnesota, owner of F. Taylor & Associates, an educational consulting firm. First of all, I just want to make it quick and short. I'm here to say that I support the plan for Minneapolis and St. Paul. I just want to make that clear up front. Secondly, I want to talk about access, equity. This process, as I've looked at it, the one that you're going to for redistricting, is a good equity process. As you know, equity comes in three kinds of ways. Equity can be transitional, it can be vertical, and it also can be horizontal. First of all, what I want to say is America, for all of its openness, there have been some people who have been left out and who have not been part of the process. And I think as a nation, we sometimes seem unaware that full participation is the right in the rights and benefits of democracy has not been made available to all Americans. And we sometimes seem not to understand that democracy is weakened when this is the case. The struggle of African American, Native American, Latinos, and others have been disenfranchised, are frequently viewed as the plight of isolated groups, and rarely as the struggle of the entire nation to fulfill its values, beliefs, and aspirations. Ironically, efforts to redress inequity in access to opportunity are often perceived as a threat to our democratic government, rather than as a celebration of its core commitment. The prospect of access to quality, housing, employment often triggers the fear of loss by privileged Americans who live the good life that is the American dream. The case has not been made persuasively enough that making good on these commitments can enhance and better secure the welfare of all. So basically what I'm here to say after our training and experience and expertise, I think the plan that we see here is one of the best that we can find right now in order to provide access to all America. And I, for one, would say that's good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Representative Gray has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. You say it's the best plan for all Americans. You didn't really express why. Would you please give me a little more detail as to why you think this plan is so good?
Well, let's take the
Mr. issue. Taylor.
Thank you. Let's take the equity issue. And as we all understand equity, it comes in three forms: horizontal, vertical, and transitional. And as we put that model, overlay that model over the plan that we see here, we find that this is the best of all worlds.
Representative Gray.
I'm still confused. I'm sorry. I don't have your background in this, apparently. In terms, in particular, say, of minority representation, which is one of the things that we've focused on in the core cities, do you suggest that this plan is better for people of color?
Yes, it's best for, best for the people of color and also the majority people. Basically, what we're trying to get to is that place where every American citizen has one vote, whether you're minority or majority. And this plan, when we put it up on against the model of equity, it works perfectly.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
Are you suggesting there is no one person, one vote now, and if so, why?
Mr. Taylor.
I think that would be quite obvious, but I'll try to explain. First of all, running for Congress out of Minneapolis, it was very, first of all, the way the district was arranged, is pretty difficult. Well, like someone said, it would be almost, it's pretty difficult for an African-American to win as a congressional senator from Minnesota, Minneapolis, to represent all the issues that we have. That would have been, that was very difficult. I ran twice. The first time, I think I got 28% of the vote. I think the second time around, my vote total went down to 20%.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
Mr. Taylor, why do you suggest that this plan then would assist you or other people of color in their efforts to run for office?
Well, let me just try to...
Mr. Taylor.
It's sort of difficult, but I'm trying to break it down and make it very, very simple. Because when you go from a technical kind of a thing, looking at something from a model, and then trying to break it down and make it very, very simple, it gets very confusing at that particular point. But this model does work for everybody. It works for every citizen within the congressional district.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
I'm still confused. Now, could you at least elaborate a little bit for me on the benefits of this plan, say, versus the current plan?
Well, let me go ahead.
Mr. Taylor.
Commonality of interest. Let me just say that I didn't go over that because most of the representative here that I listened to had made those points. And I think those points are very valid that those people who came before me made.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
Mr. Taylor, then, are you suggesting then that this plan in some way is accents the voting opportunity of African Americans? Is that why you think it's a better plan?
Mr. Taylor.
Basically, I think it's a better plan because it fits those three areas that I talked about. Transitional equity, horizontal equity, and vertical equity.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Gray.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Taylor. Are there other plans that would do the exact same thing without combining Minneapolis and St. Paul? Can you envision a plan that would do the same thing without combining the two cities?
Let me say this,
Mr. Taylor.
Basically, I've just looked at this one over the last 10 weeks, and so I haven't had a chance to look at another plan from an equity interest. Mr. Gray, too often what we've had is that we've had non-professionals looking at equity kinds of things, and I think over the years that's one of the reasons we've gotten into a lot of problems. We've seen no progress. In quite a few instances, we have seen us go further backwards. Just to give you an example, I've been in Minnesota, 38 years? And the first 15 years we spent equity, human relation, until I was blue in the face. 35 years later, after the expenditures that we had made, financial expenditures, we found when we looked at the data that we were much further behind than we were 35 years ago.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray, we have one more witness who has to leave, and we're going to recess at 9:30. So if we can, Mr. Taylor may be able to come back, but if we can quick have Ms. Sawada come down and present her short testimony, that will allow
us to defer
do that
further
before,
questions
before recess.
Chairman.
So.
Mr. Chair, I do have one quick question for the witness.
Is it a yes-no answer?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Representative Mariani,
Mr. Taylor,
come down.
Mr. Taylor, welcome to the committee. I think you testified before. Did you run, yes or no, did you run as a Republican candidate?
Yes, sir,
when you
ran?
A
Republican.
I can answer that.
You did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Ms. Sawada, welcome to the committee. If you could identify
you.
Yourself for the tape.
I wasn't sure if I was going to get to speak this morning, so I will be very brief. I'm Pat Awada. I'm the mayor of Eagan. Eagan currently sits, its northern border is on the 4th Congressional District because under the current map, the 4th Congressional District comes down and encompasses all of Mendota Heights. I'll speak very quickly about, I am in support of this map. I'm in support of keeping Eagan in a suburban district. In answer to, and there's been a lot of questions about minority and so on, I'd like to just answer because I've been watching the testimony as it's going on. But what you're looking at is you're comparing the current districts to this map. And the reality is that the 4th and the 5th district have to expand. And they have to expand quite a bit. And my concern and the reason I'm here is because what's next? Right now you've already taken in a lot of the first Rick suburbs into the current 5th or 4th district. And you are going to end up, in order to expand, to keep two inner city districts, you're going to have to come into Eagan. Or you're going to have to come into Woodbury or Invergrove Heights or Lake Elmo. And there are the minority population, and as we're talking about Hispanics, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think it's 1 or 2%. So overall, when we haven't seen any maps, but if you have a map that has two inner city districts currently expanding way, way out into the second ring suburbs, which Eagan is a second ring suburb, your minority population is going to drop dramatically under that. So that the testimony, the logic behind the minority putting the two together is that this is the only way in the state that you could have the highest population of minorities within one district. And so I think we need to be comparing apples to apples with that. Eagan currently is in three school districts. Eagan shares a school district with Mendota Heights and West St. Paul, which are currently in a different congressional district. It also shares a school district with Rosemount and Apple Valley, which we are all now currently in the 6th district. And we share a school district with Burnsville. And Burnsville is in the 3rd congressional district. So we are very split down in this area under the current map. I think it's imperative that whatever map that comes out of the legislature, that we keep counties together and we keep cities together and we keep communities of interest together. Dakota County, under this map, Dakota County and Washington County are essentially together. And we have more in common with Washington County than anywhere else in the state. We're both growing areas. We have a large population of younger people, working families. We have concerns like education, infrastructure. We're talking about roads generally, that sort of infrastructure. Those are the concerns we have. My final point is that I've been serving as a city council member, as a mayor, for 10 years in Eagan. And I attend a National League of Cities conference every year, and there's speakers and so on. And I can tell you, 10 years ago, the main speakers the main issues were very much inner city issues. There were issues that redevelopment, brownfields, race issues, those sort of issues. And for those of us that were from growing suburban communities, the conferences had very little meaning to us at that point. And it has changed. And it's changed because the suburban areas have changed. And now we have things like, helping to install correct infrastructure and those sort of things. And that's the concerns that we have. And those are the needs that we have. And so we are, even if you look at the National League of Cities, there are three very distinct types of paths, essentially, that you can go on. There's an inner city path, there's a suburban or growth community, and there is a small town. And I think that it's imperative that we also keep these together under our congressional plan. So I'll take questions, Mr.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mayor Iwata, welcome. I know the name because I have an Iwata's in the middle of my district.
That's
is
right.
That your family?
Yes, it is.
Wonderful family, Lebanese American mm-hmm. family. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of quick questions, and one, let me assure you that where I live, we certainly have infrastructure issues too. I hear a lot from my own constituents about roads and mm-hmm. drinking water and sewers, and I abut West St. Paul, mm-hmm. and sometimes there it's really difficult to tell the difference between those two communities, but. Let me ask you a question, although this puts you outside of the Eagan area, but under this plan, we cut off a chunk of southwest Minneapolis in order to make the numbers fit. In other words, there's too many people in Minneapolis and St. Paul to call it a congressional district.
I understand.
So in order to make it fit, we chop that off. Mm-hmm. So we're now putting sections of southwest Minneapolis in with first ring and second ring suburban communities. Mm-hmm. So, based on your testimony, I guess, if you can maybe just quickly tell us what that part of Minneapolis has in common with first ring and suburban and second ring suburban communities to justify that kind of move.
I think it's, thank you, Mr. Chair. That section of Minneapolis, more than any other part in the Minneapolis or St. Paul area, has more demographically in common with its suburban counterparts. I think if you look at the housing stock, the income levels, the general concerns, I think that they have more. And I think it's unfortunate that there is, that Minneapolis would be split under the plan, but it is just as unfortunate that under any other plan, you're splitting Dakota County, you're splitting our cities, you're splitting, you know, numerous other areas. So the lines don't match perfectly, but I think of all Minneapolis and St. Paul, that's clearly the one area. And I think further, we're going to be sitting here 10 years from now, too. And the population of Minneapolis and St. Paul has stabilized, it seems, finally. You know, it's dropped to the bottom of the, but the twins, or the state is going to continue to grow, and the growth is going to continue to be in the suburbs. And so 10 years from now, a congressional, Minneapolis and St. Paul will probably have less population than a congressional district. And so we'll see these maps change again.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Sawada, I agree with you. I think it would be great, terribly unfortunate to chop off the city of Minneapolis, which my understanding has not been chopped off for over 100 years, two-thirds of our history. But it sounds like you're in agreement, or it sounds, if I keep talking, maybe we won't let Ron talk here in a second. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you're in agreement that there are parts of the Twin Cities, of the urban core, that in fact do have some commonalities with our first and second ring suburbs.
There are parts of
Sawada,
of Minneapolis that do have something in common with our first.
I think you could argue that that section of South Minneapolis has more in common with its suburbs in Hennepin County than with Minneapolis, or at least equally in common. But I don't think you can argue at all that the first ring suburbs around it, like Edina and Golden Valley and St. Louis Park, and further out to in St. Paul, Eagan, Mendota Heights. Mendota Heights has nothing in common with St. Paul.
North St. Paul, Maplewood.
I believe has much more in common with the suburbs.
I think we might differ on that, but I think you can make arguments both sides on that, Mayor. Right. I think that's right.
Uh-huh. Representative Abrams, you had a point. And then
yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, and the redistricting in the 1960s, the old 3rd Congressional District took in a number of precincts in the city of Minneapolis and went out into suburban Hennepin, and I think even part of Wright County back then, if I'm not mistaken. But yes, Minneapolis has been cut in the past, Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I stand corrected by our esteemed historian of the House.
We will recess. We're in violation of the rules if we stay open, so we will recess until the break in session.
Thank you.
Was that Adrian Nelson's district?
Went through all of our testimony.